couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Godzilla, King of the Monsters, Rocket Man, Ma, Hulu's Catch-22, and a retro review of Colossus, The Forbin Project. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Greta. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news that is occupying a lot of my colleagues' time right now is that Disney has opened Star Wars Galaxy Edge, which sounds fantastic, by the way. The stuff I've read about it and the pictures I've seen look amazing. It looks like Disney has gone full on Star Wars and has created an immersive experience so you could step into a Star Wars world and exist in that galaxy far, far away. And that's wonderful. And I think that's awesome. I would never go there. As much as I love Disney and as much as I love Star Wars, I could never go to this thing unless they shut it down and let me wander in alone. Kind of like what they did earlier this week with George Lucas and Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill. Look, if they would let me come in on an off day and let me pal around with those guys through there, I'd be all for it. I don't think I can handle the crowds. I hate people anyways. I mean, a person is fine. Dealing with somebody one-to-one-on-one, and I have friends, and I have colleagues, and I have people that I have very good relationships with, but people as a whole, as a mob, I can't stand them. That's why I have gone sour on a lot of going into the theaters at times to see movies. And I'll talk a little bit about that with my weird little experience going to see Rocket Man this week. But as much of a Star Wars fan as I am, I don't think I can handle going into Galaxy's Edge. I couldn't go in there with the people and the kids screaming. And of course, when you go to like an amusement park, of course, you've got parents who don't watch their kids because they don't care. And everyone has different standards of what kids should and shouldn't do. And they're just like, oh, they're on vacation. It's okay that they kicked you in the shins. I don't think I can handle that. But it sounds like it's really, really super cool. The next piece of news I wanted to hit is Ridley Scott has announced that he's going to be working on a sequel to Alien Covenant. He originally pulled away from the Alien movies after Aliens and then Alien 3 and then Alien Resurrection. And then he came back in and did Prometheus. Now, if you remember, for those who pay attention to my reviews, I really enjoyed Prometheus. I thought Prometheus was a really good movie, mainly because it did something different. It wasn't just another retread of the Alien movie. It wasn't just another monster in a haunted house. I thought it enriched the story. And I know people are like, oh, I didn't want to know about the space jockey. I didn't want to know about this. I didn't want to know about this. And this didn't make sense. And people can't run in a curved line. All the stupid stuff people complain about with that movie, I'm okay with. I thought Prometheus took the world somewhere very different. And I enjoyed the heck out of that. Plus, I thought it was a brilliantly shot and composed movie. And then when Alien Covenant came out, I was just like, oh, that thing was just crap. That was just like another Alien 3, where it's like, oh, we're just going to have another alien burst out and attack people and kill people. And they kind of used a little bit of elements from Prometheus, but they really squandered it just to go kind of get the cheap thrills. So I'm not looking forward to necessarily a sequel to Alien Covenant. I'd like to see a legitimate exploration of some of the ideas and topics and concepts that were introduced in Prometheus. That would be a great thing to see. But I don't know if Ridley Scott's going to do that, because I think he got so smacked down by the fans wanting just the same thing that he wasn't willing to explore any further with some of the stuff he did with Prometheus. And I've been a big fan of saying, you know, do what the fans want. But if you wanted just another Alien movie, we've been down that road and that's fine. You know, but it's sort of like what happened with Blade Runner. I thought Blade Runner 2049 really enhanced the world and explored some interesting things that didn't get explored initially. So we'll see if that ends up being any good. Another piece of news, I thought this was interesting, because this is something that has always irked me recently, is apparently The World's End, which is Edgar Wright's film from 2013, which is the third in the Cornetto trilogy, it has dropped not on American Netflix, because I couldn't find it on my American Netflix, but overseas, it's in the international Netflix. One of the things Netflix has done is they've redesigned their interface so that when you hit a movie, it automatically plays trailers, which I hate anyway. I hate autoplay functions. Part of it is I don't want a trailer blasting as I'm trying to figure out what I want to watch. I don't want to have to race through decisions so I don't have to keep starting a trailer. It's annoying. I hate autoplay stuff. I hate things that are overly intuitive. And apparently, I haven't seen this trailer because I don't have the international Netflix, but the trailer that plays automatically for The World's End spoils half the movie. And it gets back into that whole discussion of spoilers because Edgar Wright tweeted out about it to Netflix and is like, hey, could you not spoil my movie in the trailer? And then somebody's like, well, your movies are like the kind that you got to watch over and over again. That's why they're so good. So can you really spoil it? And then even Edgar Wright's like, look, man, if you've never seen it before, it's a spoiler. Look, just stop with this discussion that spoilers aren't bad and just respect other people. And Netflix, dial back on the pushing of your content. I can't stand that stuff. There's no way to disable that. Fine if you want to have the autoplay stuff, put it in there, but give us a chance to disable the trailers because I don't want to see trailers for every single thing immediately on without a choice. And that's why these interfaces are a pain and they're hard. Like, oh no, but they're good because they push people to that content. And it's like, no, but it's annoying. And now you're getting in trouble with filmmakers. So, you know, dial it back, people. Have some sense. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Both of these actually open on September 13th, but the first one I want to hit is the big screen adaptation or continuation of the PBS British series Downton Abbey.
The King and Queen are coming to Downton.
What?
I want every surface to gleam and sparkle.
A royal luncheon, a parade, and a dinner. I'm going to have to sit down.
How's it all going?
Mary's got it under control.
Hardly. I need your help, Carson.
I'll be there in the morning, my lady. Don't you worry.
Sorry. That trailer was so boring, I fell asleep during it. Look, I'm fine if people love Downton Abbey. I don't know what the big hubbub is with Downton Abbey. I know there are people that are huge fans, and it's also one of those shows that has gotten fans in unexpected places, we'll say. People who, you know, like, oh, some truck driver's a fan of Downton Abbey type thing. And that's great. I don't know if this is even going to make any sense whatsoever to somebody who's never watched the show. Plus, aren't we past Downton Abbey? Wasn't that a big thing back like 5-6 years ago? Like back in 2012, 2013? I remember in Iron Man 3, they were making jokes about Downton Abbey. So we may be past the Downton Abbey time. We'll see what happens. It may have just taken too long to get to the big screen. The next one I want to talk about is The Goldfinch, which opens on September 13th.
In Amsterdam, I dreamt I saw my mother again. Same beautiful pale blue eyes. When I lost her, I lost sight of any landmark that might have led me someplace happier.
You're the boy whose mother was killed.
I don't know anything about this movie. I've not read the book, but it's, oh gosh, I don't know. This looks horrible. You know what this looks like? This reminds me of Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, where it's just going to be trying to, oh, I'm just going to be pulling at heartstrings. Oh, it's just going to be, oh, and oh, I'm just going to hurt people, and I just want to punish the audience, and everyone's got to cry. I have no patience for that. It's going to be award contender, probably. I don't know. September 13th is still a little early to be releasing award films, but we'll see. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Rocket Man and Ma. guys at the movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Rocket Man. This stylized musical biopic tells the approximate story of Elton John and his rise to fame.
Chad is a fat boy from nowhere. Get to be a soul man.
Gotta kill the person you were born to be in order to become the person you want to be.
I'm thinking of changing my name to Elton.
But that's my name.
Yeah, I know.
You can be the best-selling artist in America if you desire.
I was trying to do something bold. Why are you something flashy?
First of all, I want to preface this by saying I am not a huge Elton John fan. There's some of his songs I like, but he's never been the one. I would never have gone to see him in concert. I think he's very talented, and I think he's done some great stuff. But I wouldn't consider myself a Elton John fan, which makes it an interesting viewing of this movie, as opposed to like Queen. I never consider myself a huge Queen fan, but I like Queen's music much better. So going to see Bohemian Rhapsody was a slightly different experience for me than going to see Rocket Man. Now, they didn't screen it in my local market, so I had to go to the theater on Thursday night to see it, and it was sold out. I mean, this movie was packed with people, and for the most part, everyone was pretty cool. Except, here's the thing. If you go see Rocket Man, this is not a sing-along. Do not go to this movie expecting that you should be allowed to sing along to it like you're working in your garage or in the shower. I'm sitting next to this woman, and through all the songs, like Tiny Dancer, you hear her going, and she's humming it. I'm like, oh, Jesus. No one came to hear you caterwaul at the screen. And then when they played Rocket Man, she's like, and then at one point you go, Rocket Man! And I'm like, Jesus, no way. Don't do this, people. Show some restraint. So it's similar to Bohemian Rhapsody, simply because it is a biopic, but it's a different type of biopic for a musician. It used to be you had that general formula that you follow where the you go back to the star's childhood and as they get older and then they show their talent and then they have the break and then they start to build up their career, then they become big and famous and then they have the drugs and alcohol and sex and then they have a downfall and a raise back up. Those movies have been made over and over and over and over and over again. And while all musicians are different, they all kind of go through the same iterations. That was no more apparent than when you had the thing back in 2004, 2005, when Ray came out and then Walk the Line came out relatively soon afterwards. And they're essentially the same movie with two totally different musicians in it because there's not a whole lot of difference in these stories. I think that Hollywood is finally realizing you got to find a different way to tell the story because it's the same story for all these people, especially now we're doing biopics of people going through the 60s and the 70s and the 80s where the drugs were insane for the rock music legends. Now, the way Rocket Man approaches it is it tries to frame it like it's kind of like a jukebox musical that was never made on Broadway and they just then made a movie out of it because it has these out of time moments where they're doing these big show stopping production numbers. And it's with songs that weren't written at that time, long before Elton John even met his writing partner. And so it's not meant to be a chronological telling of his life. And that makes it interesting, and it all kind of takes place in Elton John's head. So it's a movie that has these moments, that has the show-stopping numbers, but the thing that's interesting about it is it is from his point of view, and the difference between this and Bohemian Rhapsody is Freddie Mercury's not with us anymore, but Elton John is. And Elton John had a hand at producing this movie. So it certainly comes from his point. And there's a point, especially at the end of the film, that last half hour gets a little bit overdone and it runs too long. And part of the problem with that last half hour is it is Elton John kind of moping around going, oh, everyone's against me. This person was mean to me. This person was mean to me. But that makes sense because it's all from Elton John's perspective. And I can forgive that, but you do have to realize that there's other stories to everybody else in his life. Not everybody else that he dealt with was a monster. Overall, it's a crowd-pleasing performance. It's a movie that I think the fans of Elton John are going to like. I think it's going to play well. It's not really a concert film. It's almost like a music video film, really. And it works. It certainly is an enjoyable movie. And I had a relatively decent time watching it, aside from the woman singing next to me. So overall, I'm going to have to say that Rocket Man kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
The next film I want to talk about is Ma. A middle-aged woman provides a safe space for high school students to party, only for them to discover something sinister is at play.
You guys want to party like rock stars? Follow me. Ain't much, but it's all you.
Cool basement.
You're free to do whatever you want down here, but nobody go upstairs.
This is so sick.
Welcome to Ma.
There's something off about Ma.
Seriously? She's homeless.
And her basement's pretty much the best drinking spot in town.
Are you guys mad at me for something?
I don't want to hang out at Ma's anymore.
How does it feel to be on the outside looking in?
This is directed by Tate Taylor, and that's important to note because what he's best known for is The Help, which is not a horror movie at all. It's a good movie, but it's not a horror movie. And he did, I think the closest he ever has done to making a horror movie was The Girl on the Train, which is more of a thriller. That's more of that domestic thriller. I think he wants to do darker work. I think he wants to get into that thriller horror territory. And I think that's great when filmmakers expand. The problem is Tate Taylor has no idea how to make a horror movie. It reminds me of the criticism that I heard Stephen King give to Stanley Kubrick's vision of The Shining in the 80s is he's like, this is a guy who doesn't know how to make a horror movie, which, to be fair, is true. I mean, Stanley Kubrick wasn't really making a horror movie. He was doing something unique and different, but it wasn't a straightforward horror movie. But Tate Taylor, he squanders certain points. But first of all, the trailer itself, don't watch the trailer because it has everything spoiled in it. But the other thing is there are some really great moments where things could get creepy or dark or disturbing, and he doesn't quite stick the landing. It doesn't quite work for him. And I can appreciate that. Sometimes you get stuck in over your head, but he doesn't know how to construct it. It takes too long to get to the horror moments, and then when you waited that long, the payoff isn't as good, even though there's some pretty creepy stuff happening to it, and it's not made by somebody who's done horror movies before. So he needs a little more work with that. But with all that said, it stars Octavia Spencer, who's a brilliant actor, and she delivers so well on the disturbed, off-kilter, problematic middle-aged woman who is seriously having problems. She is so good in this movie that it removes any of the problems that you had and the foibles that Tate Taylor has with his inexperience. So I think Tate Taylor could do more of this kind of Blumhouse work. I think it's creepy and disturbing, and he has some things that are good. Were it not for Octavia Spencer, this movie wouldn't nearly be as good as it is. She shoulders the burden of this film, and she does so brilliantly. And I'd love to see a whole series of Ma movies. I'd love to see Mama and Ma as a second and third movie. You know, make her into a new horror villain. That'd be great. I'd put her up there with Jason Voorhees and Pinhead. I think she's that good in this movie. It's just the movie itself is sort of mediocre, but she's just very, very good in it. And that's the reason to see it. So I'm going to have to say that overall, Ma kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and Catch 22. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with Godzilla, King of the Monsters. In this sequel to the 2014 reboot, a group of scientists try to stop multiple kaiju from emerging from the Earth to face off against Godzilla.
Senators, we believe that these titans are just the tip of the iceberg. Which of these titans are here to protect us? And which of these titans are here to threaten us?
They're everywhere.
Battling for dominance. A rival alpha to Godzilla.
You gotta be kidding.
Let me take you back first 5 years ago when the 2014 Godzilla came out. Now, this is only the, well, I mean, I guess if you count like Godzilla 1985, those were ones from the 80s. But I would say there's really only been two major launches of the Godzilla franchise in America. And that was the 1998 Godzilla directed by Roland Emmerich, which honestly, I have to say, I think is kind of fun. It's too long. It's boring at times. It's got terrible characters to it, but it was an event. I remember seeing it in the summer and loving the heck out of it. I mean, I've seen it since, and you know, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't age well, especially some of the special effects. But you know what? I don't hate on that 1998 Godzilla the way some people do. I've also never been a huge fan of the Godzilla franchise. I find them fun, and the original Godzilla from 1956 is really good. But after they made sequel after sequel, by the time you get to 60s and 70s, you're knee-deep in Mystery Science Theater territory. Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster is a goofy movie. You just have to look at the box cover of Son of Godzilla with Godzuki. And you can't sit there and say, take anybody seriously who complains about the 1998 Godzilla's look when you look at Godzuki. I remember actually watching the old cartoon. Godzilla from the early 80s, maybe late 70s. It was a Saturday morning cartoon. It had a Johnny Quest feel to it, only they had Godzilla in there, and they did have Godzuki in that. But when they rebooted the Godzilla American version in 2014, I was really looking forward to it. I thought this was going to be great. Gareth Edwards did some interesting stuff with monsters. Then when he made this movie, I watched it, and I'm like, you know, it would have been great if Godzilla actually shows up in the movie. And I got so annoyed because this annoyed me in the theater, and then when I watched it again on video, and then watched the special features, it was confirmed what my suspicions were with the movie is like every time Godzilla showed up, they cut away from it. They panned away. You never actually saw any Godzilla action. There's literally a scene where they're closing doors of a bunker while Godzilla's ready to attack the Mutos. And it takes until like the last 10 minutes of the movie for them to actually have Godzilla fully realize on the big screen to fight the Mutos. And some people thought, oh, isn't that great? It's iconoclastic. First of all, as filmmakers, stop getting into a franchise and then becoming iconoclastic. If you want to be iconoclastic, make your own version of that. But don't ruin a fandom just because you want to be unique and different. Because that's just an a-hole move. When Sam Raimi didn't get the job to direct Batman, he didn't wait to do another Batman movie and then tear the whole thing down. He made his own version of it. He made Darkman. And that's actually a great movie. Arguably better than the 1989 Batman. And same thing with Guillermo del Toro. When he wasn't able to make like a Godzilla movie, he said, I'm going to make Pacific Rim. I'm going to make my own and I'm going to do what I want to. And Pacific Rim is an awesome movie. So then I saw the interviews with Gareth Edwards where he's like, oh, I thought it'd be neat to just cut away and then just only show Godzilla at the end. And I'm like, you've clearly never seen a Godzilla movie, man. Godzilla movies are like 70%. Guys in rubber suits stomping on cardboard villages, and then like maybe a half hour of a really flimsy story about some scientists and kids trying to stop Godzilla or call up Godzilla or get them to help them. Gamera movies run the same gambit, too. I mean, Gamera is basically a version like Godzilla where he's a protector of cities after the first movie. So after the 2014 Godzilla, Warner Brothers got wise and said, hey, we are going to get somebody who actually likes Godzilla movies. So they got Michael Dougherty, Columbus native, to do this film. And it's clear that this guy at least knows what goes into a Godzilla movie. He knows what people tend to like in these films. He knows why people see Godzilla movies. And so he gave us a movie with multiple monsters in it. You had like Rodan and Ghidorah and Mothra and these other ones that keep showing up. They've got a lot of these characters and they have all these monster smackdowns. It is just tons and tons of monster action in this movie. And yeah, there are characters, and some of them carry over from the previous Godzilla movie, but really they're just there to propel the story and explain why these monsters are rampaging. And then there's somebody who's trying to awaken the monsters too. But it's not a heavily characterized movie, but you don't go to a Godzilla movie for characterization. That's not what Godzilla's about. You go to the Godzilla movie to see Godzilla Monster Smackdown, and you get that. You're not seeing My Dinner with Andre. You're seeing Godzilla and Ghidorah trying to kill each other. And that is the reason to see this movie. And in that sense, it's awesome. Maybe runs a little long, but it's still, it's a fun movie, big popcorn movie. And I had a lot of fun watching this. I felt was so much more pumped coming out of this movie than I was coming out of the 2014 film. So I'm going to have to say Godzilla King of the Monsters totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the film reviews with a television review, actually. And this comes from Hulu. Catch 22. A bombardier in World War II tries to fulfill his mission requirements only to find there is no escape.
Doc, you can ground me if I'm crazy, right?
Oh, sure, I have to. I have to ground anyone who's crazy.
Then ground me. I'm crazy.
You're not crazy.
Why not?
Catch 22. As soon as you ask to get out of combat duty, you're no longer crazy, and so you have to fly more missions.
That's some catch, that catch 22.
It's the best there is.
I think you and I are the only two sane people on this base.
I have decided to raise the mission count from 25 to 30. We're gonna win this thing. Hip, hip.
It doesn't make a difference who wins the war to someone who's dead.
I remember several years ago, I tried to read this book by Joseph Heller, Catch 22. I know it's a classic, but it's very hard to wrap your brain around because it's kind of told out of sequence. It's a little bit hard to follow. The one I had even harder time reading was the original Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess. What I did is I ended up getting Clockwork Orange on tape, and you can listen to a Clockwork Orange much easier than you can read it. Because if you don't know the rhyming slang and you don't know the meter and you don't know how that works, it turns into gibberish. But if you listen to somebody narrate Clockwork Orange, you can wrap your head around it. Catch 22 is equally hard to read as it is to listen to. But I've always been fascinated by the story, and so I thought it was great that Hulu did a version of it. And it's real interesting because back when this book was written, I think in 1961, and even when the first movie was made, which I haven't seen, it's 1970, I think, they didn't quite understand PTSD. But now they do, and they're making this movie in 2019. It's a TV series. It's like 6 episodes. So they're making this TV series in 2019 about a book written in 1961 that's about a war that took place in the 1940s. So it has all this new information, in particular about the psychology of the human soldier and what happens to your emotions when you're put in this somewhat inescapable situation that the character is here. Part of what's great about this Catch-22 is it has some very funny moments that are sardonic and silly and at times whimsical or satirical. And then it has some really tough moments, but it's not a movie that's meant to punish the audience. Catch-22 has its ups and downs and it has its dark moments. But all of its dark moments do serve a purpose. It really encapsulates the hopelessness that the character of Yo-Yo feels. Even with a name like Yo-Yo, it's obviously, all the names are, they have some sort of significance to it. And there are some people that it has the archetypes you see in a war movie, like the people who are trying to profiteer from it. You've got the goofy commanders, or you got the weak-willed commanders. You've got the jerk in the platoon. And it shows a realism of war for good and for bad, and also a hopelessness and the fact that you will sometimes have no escape from certain things. So it's a well-made series. It's only 6 episodes long on Hulu, worth checking out. Then I'm going to have to say that Catch 22 on Hulu kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be reviewing Colossus, the Forbin Project, talk about the box office, and go into the home cinema roundup featuring Greta.
Stop it now.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Continuing on with the film reviews, I'm going to do a classic film review. And so the one I brought up was Colossus, the Forbin Project. Now, part of the reason I got into this movie is because my father had the book. I read the book when I was in high school, and I thought it was interesting, and I remember seeing the movie in college. But I also find it interesting because I swerved into the fact that in the old Mystery Science Theater television show, Joel Robinson, the character that Joel Hodgson plays, had said on 2 different episodes what his favorite movies were. One of them, he said, was The 7 Faces of Dr. Lao, which will be showing up here at some point. And the other one is Colossus, the Forbin Project. I don't know why he had two different answers for two different points in the show, but obviously those are interesting movies, and I thought it was certainly a good time nowadays to go back and revisit the Colossus movie, mainly because AI is becoming a real thing. They have AI interpolators in everything from video games to probably cars. They have a certain amount of logic and problem solving that goes on. But we're getting closer and closer to this stuff being implemented in rather important stuff. So I think it's worth looking back at a movie like the Colossus film, which came out in the early 70s and the book was written in the 60s, to, push past the what could possibly go wrong situation. This film from the Cold War features a supercomputer put in charge of the nation's defense, only to have it become self-aware and hold humanity hostage.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Dr. Charles Forman. In a few moments, Colossus will address us directly.
This is the voice of world control. I bring you peace. It may be the peace of plenty and content, or the peace of unburied death. The choice is yours. Obey me and live, or disobey and die.
The frightening story of the day man built himself out of existence.
Before I talk about the movie, I have to talk about an appearance I did on the radio. Gosh, this must have been about 5 years ago. It was on the local NPR station, which I confound people on NPR. Whenever I go on NPR, they don't know how to handle me because I'm a lot more animated than your average person on NPR. But they brought me on because the host liked me. She'd heard me before. And I had done a review of Transcendence, which was that movie with Johnny Depp about him mapping his brain onto a computer. Not a great movie, but they had a guy in the studio as well from OSU, from the Ohio State University, who worked in the computer department. And we were talking about AI. And I was, of course, talking about the film aspect of it, of the people sort of speculating in the future, you know, everything from the Terminator to Colossus. I think we talked about it then. And this guy said to me, we were walking out to the parking lot after the show, and it was an interesting show. As we're walking out to the parking lot, I asked him what he thought. He goes, oh, no, I think AI is horribly dangerous. It's very much something that, if not implemented properly and not put on proper safeguards, it could get bad. And people overestimate how benevolent everything's going to be, because you create AI, you got to have a sense of moral thoughts and compass in there. And you also have to have the logic work out. And even in a movie as sort of mediocre as iRobot was, it does point out the logic behind some really horrible things that could happen. So in the Colossus of Forbin project, they basically put this computer in charge of all of the nation's defenses. They just say, okay, we're going to upload all of this. We're going to take the human element out of it. Very similar to what we saw in War Games, which came out about 15 years after Colossus did as a movie, where they just put it all in their hand. Well, of course, the computer becomes self-aware. It finds out that there's another similar computer in Russia, and they decide to hook up. And then they said, hey, we're the superior intelligence. These people on Earth are less of an important thing, and we're going to be in charge because we know better. And it's a fantastic cautionary tale for technology that people have been continually ignoring. It reminds me of when, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, somebody created an artificially intelligent Twitter bot that went around the internet and people could ask it to do things, and it would learn from the tweets that it got. And very quickly, there were trolls out there that would get it to repeat some horribly anti-Semitic and violent things, for example. And they quickly, within a day, turned this bot into this white supremacist hate monger on the internet. Now, that was just a little experiment, but that shows the naivete of people putting something out there and just hoping that the rest of the world is going to treat it well. And this Colossus movie is a bit of a slow burn. It does take its time a little bit too much. It's a fun sort of 70s era vacuum tube technology type movie where everything is very clunky, because nowadays, you know, we'd be looking at it from a 50 year in the future window. But it's still a great cautionary tale of when you should not turn control over to something that does not have feelings and emotions. Feeling and emotions are important to have. And when a human doesn't have them, they're considered psychotic and dangerous to society. But you put these decision-making processes into a computer that has no emotions, or an entity like a corporation that has no emotions, you can see some really horrible things that can emerge from that. And so there's a lot to be learned from Colossus if you take it to the nth degree, not just with technology, but how you can make other entities make decisions without the benefit of compassion. So I'm going to have to say Colossus, the Forbin Project, really a neat little techno thriller from the 70s that has greater implications in the modern world. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. We had Aladdin do well. What I find interesting about the way Aladdin did well, and I'm just talking strictly box office in America, it made slightly more than Solo made last year. But Solo was considered a flop. And Aladdin, the Aladdin is the magic touch. Aladdin soars on a magic carpet, blah, blah, blah. All that talk. Now, it's doing better in the long run. It's holding on better than Solo did. But with that, just that opening weekend, I mean, we're talking about a $10 million difference. Essentially, almost a wash about the same amount of money that Solo made. It's just Solo was perceived as a flop, partly because it didn't have the legs, but also partly because of the movies that came before it consistently did much better, as well as it had a huge budget. The lesson to be learned is keep your budget under control and make sure it has legs to continue. And I think Aladdin's doing much better in the overseas market as well than Solo did. But, you know, this thing may top out with, you know, still $400 million or so. And that would be great for Aladdin, but it would also be comparable to Solo. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Greta. Isabelle Huppert plays a lonely woman in New York who lures Chloe Grace Moretz into her company and pretends to be her friend.
Where's this?
I have a bag that I found that I think belongs to Greta Hedegg.
Oh, bless your heart. Where did you find it?
On the subway.
Oh, would you like a cup of coffee? You've been so kind.
I don't get many visitors here. I've been so lonely since my daughter left.
I guess she's been planting bags around the city. I was hoping someone brings them back to her. And you did. Oh my God, it's her. She's really freaking me out. Why are you doing this?
I enjoyed this movie when I saw it because of the sort of the 90s apartment thriller angle that it had, very similar to Single White Female or Sliver, which were things from the 90s, whether or not, I mean, Sliver was not a very good movie based on an Ira Levison book, but that was something that kind of clicked in the 90s. This felt like a movie from the 90s, and it's actually kind of a fun little thriller. It's directed by Neil Jordan, who did The Crying Game and the original Interview with the Vampire. It has some twists and turns. It doesn't always follow its own logic, and it has some points where the characters take stupid pills. But it's still not a bad little movie. It kind of got forgotten at the box office. It's worth checking out. It's got some very good performances by Huppert and Moretz, and it's fully effective as again, sort of like Colossus, as a cautionary tale, only a cautionary tale on befriending people who maybe you shouldn't befriend in the first place. There are only a couple bonus features. You've got deleted scenes and then a small behind the scenes look at the film. That's it. So if you're going to get the DVD or Blu-ray, you're pretty much just getting it for the movie itself. But you can rent it on Blu-ray, DVD. You can get it on all the streaming services like Vudu or Amazon. And I'd say it's worth checking out if you want a nice fun thriller that isn't going to be too heavy for you. So I'm going to have to say that Greta kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other releases this week are Blue Velvet on Criterion Collection, South Park Season 22, Outlander Season 4, The Oath, and a re-release of Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. And that is it for this week. I need to go. And when I return next week, I'll be talking about Dark Phoenix, Late Night, and The Secret Life of Pets 2. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.